This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you.
This is Rakesh, your host this week on the People Speak Radio. The People Speak invites audience participation. You can listen by phone calling 805-399-1000, then entering access code 6996. Oh, sorry about that. 769608 pound when prompted. Or if you have a smartphone or a computer, you can go to bbsradio.com and navigate to station 2 and click on the listen icon. You can also participate during the show with call-in questions for our guests, toll-free USA and Canada, 1-888-429-5471. Tonight, our guest is David Rovix, the musician, the vocal warrior against the global elite, a champion against the victimization of humanity worldwide. Dave, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Good to be with you.
I believe we're going to be playing one of your songs, right off the bat, and then we can discuss why you came up with the song. But before that happens, I have a listener that is a fan of yours, and if I didn't mention her name is Julia from Germany, and she wishes you the best, and she just wants you to know that she loves you. So, can we now play the song? Go ahead.
They're making us buy health care, and the Republicans can't stand it. They're not just asking to get their way, they demand it. If they can't change the bathwater, they'll throw the baby out the door. They just can't stand to see such subsidies going to the poor. So they've shut down the government with whatever message that might send. If you need a mortgage or a student loan, there's no money left to lend. All the babies who need WIC so they can have some dinner are just going to have to go without and get a little...
Awesome song.
Thank you.
Tell us how you came up with the lyrics. I mean, everything is not hard to figure out, but let's have your perspective on it.
Well, it's always good song fodder when there's something happening in the political sphere that everybody's talking about, you know, whatever it may be. And that was the government shutdown was certainly one of those things. And then when I thought I wanted to write a song about the government shutdown, I thought the most glaring thing for me is that, you know, half of our taxes go to the military. So when the Republicans, they're constantly complaining about spending and, taxation and all this, and what a terrible hole we're in, which, of course, is a very bipartisan hole. But it's the biggest expenditure is the military, and it's also the one that is the most responsible for supporting dictatorships and suppressing democracy around the world, which is what our military is especially good at. So it's, it seems like the obviously least essential thing that we're spending money on is the military, and we should be spending on the actual essential things, like all the things that were shut down during the government shutdown.
Yeah, well, not to mention the starving elderly and children all across the United States. But with that being said, it takes both parties to tango. And both parties seem to be dancing together when it comes down to anything that's going on. So it's not just the Republicans, it's the Republicans and the Democrats.
Not. I mean, both parties support spending half of our taxes on the military. So what kind of choice do we have? It's a totally unique situation in terms of democracies around the world. We are the only country that's spending half of our taxes on the military. And we're also, we also have one of the most primitive and most overtly corrupt political systems of any democracy. You know, it's all run by lobbyists. And it's only two parties. It's built into the thing. You know, other countries have instant runoff voting or proportional representation, and they end up with multiple parties. And the main two parties, as there often are, they have to watch out if they totally mess up, because one of the third parties can actually take over, as has happened recently, like in Iceland.
So, well, I, I, I'm sorry to cut you off. I'm hoping that a third party happens here. We've been praying for it, actually. It's funny how they can have all this money to go out and go to war and attack other nations in the name of democracy. How I'd never understood the fact of spreading democracy by killing people. That you know.
Yeah.
Yet they point the finger at Muslims and say, well, these people want things their way and they're killing people. But they don't look at themselves killing other people to spread democracy. So,
absolutely. And supporting dictatorships all over the world, you know. And also, as the official line is to criticize Muslim fundamentalists and such, you know, Al-Qaeda and other Muslim fundamentalist groups have always been the ally of the United States. The United States has, for half a century, been supporting Muslim fundamentalist groups in order to offset the secular left in many different Muslim countries. You know, the secular left is what they're most concerned about. So they've always been promoting Islamic fundamentalism along with dictatorship in places like Chile and Argentina, and, you know, El Salvador and elsewhere, you know, Colombia, you know.
Great.
It's a corrupt government we've got.
Yeah, it's amazing to find a musician that's so well endowed with knowledge as far as the political system and atrocities that have been going on worldwide. I understand you're a big advocate for the Palestinians.
Oh, certainly.
Yeah, well, I am a Palestinian myself, so it's well appreciated. We suffered the atrocities over there in the Middle East, so we understand what it's all about.
Absolutely.
But what brought you into the fight?
Well, it's hard to say. You know, it was always, ever since I started paying attention to the news as a kid, I was aware of what was happening in the Middle East, and I guess it was with the Al-Aqsa Intifada starting that I started to write songs about the conflict, and started to become vilified by Zionists and somewhat known to people in the community that's supporting Palestinian sovereignty and self-determination and supporting the Palestinian struggle. You know, that was kind of the beginning of it for me, but it goes as far back as my birth, I guess. I mean, it's Palestine. It's intimately involved with the United States in so many ways. And I grew up in the New York area, so even more so there. You know?
Oh, great. Yeah, I'm from Long Island myself originally, but I don't live there anymore. I moved out to the West Coast like you. What do you think of the Zionist realm? What do you think of them as far as their connections with the atrocities going on worldwide?
Well, it's really fascinating and bizarre to think about the role of Israel in global politics, because when you really look at it, it just, you know, even for a sort of a real serious political hack, like I would consider myself to be, it's still confusing because so many policies of the United States only seem to make sense if the U.S. was doing everything, at least in the Arab world, for the benefit of Israel. But if the United States had interests that were independent of Israel, there's a lot of policies that don't make sense. You know, if the U.S. actually wants to occupy Muslim countries and wants to win the hearts and minds of the occupied, then the first, most obvious thing to do would be to stop supporting everything Israel ever does. But it seems that the U.S. would rather spend unbelievable amounts of resources on occupying Iraq and Afghanistan without doing the most basic thing that would, potentially win some hearts and minds to the American empire, if that's possible, which would be to stop treating Israel like it has this exclusive thing going on. Like, you know, to talk about disarming the Middle East with weapons of mass destruction and not to talk about the hundreds of nuclear warheads that are sitting in Dimona, you know, it's just, it's madness. And everybody in the Arab world knows that. There's not a single Arab who doesn't know that.
Well, the United States kind of reminds me of a bad parent. And the bad parent would let the black sheep do whatever it wanted to do while it punished the other children. If the United States wants to play the role of the parenting of the entire world, then they need to work with an even hand. But who, once again, who are we to push everybody else around? With that being said, I have some questions from my audience. Mike in California said that he read an article that you wrote. You said you visited many third world countries with better standards of living than the United States, and you categorized it as a banana republic here in the United States. So can you elaborate on it?
The United States, just going back to Palestine, there's some poverty in Palestine, but, you know, everybody in Palestine, even under Israeli occupation, has universal health care. You know, just to take that as an example, it's not that we'd want to have the living standards that they currently have under the embargo in Gaza or something, but even under occupation, they have universal health care in Palestine. I mean, I have a good friend who was shot by the Israelis when he was 18 in the First Intifada. And he's, you know, even he was getting all the health care he needed there living in Beit Sahur, you know, before he moved to the U.S. But this is the United States is unlike other sort of developed countries. It's a very different country from, you know, the other developed countries. If you've traveled around Europe or Japan or Australia, the whole situation in the U.S., even compared to Canada, is really, really quite different. There is this massive underclass here that is not taken care of by any kind of services whatsoever, and if it weren't for food stamps, there would be starvation on a large scale in this country, I'm sure.
Well, starvation is still there on a large scale. They just don't report it to, you know, the media doesn't show everybody what's really going on out there. I've driven through the streets of Los Angeles, and I've seen people picking up food out of the garbage cans that other people just threw away. And so starvation is rampant out there. It's not that it's not rampant, but they're not focused on that. They're focused at going to war rather than feeding the people, which is a fallacy, and I believe it's against the Constitution because their main goal is to work for the people, and that's changed. Your emphasis, please.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, you know, a friend of mine who's an economist teaches at Western Connecticut State University, he pointed out that Japan has a higher tax, Japan has a lower tax rate than the United States does, which is amazing if you've been there, because they have an incredible infrastructure in terms of the schools and the mass transit and so many other things, and universal health care. And with all that, they have a lower taxation rate than the United States does. It pretty much sums up the problem.
Yeah. And what do you think of Obama? What do you think of his Obamacare? I see it being a farce on the American public and just something for the insurance companies to force health care on people. Your opinion?
I mean, the insurance companies, the whole thing with Clinton's attempted health care reform and with the health care reform that Obama managed to pass, it all has the same problem, and it's that it keeps the insurance companies in the game. And there's no place for private corporations in monopolies. So if we're going to be doing something like building some kind of infrastructure or having a national health care plan, It seems to me that these kinds of services are best run by ourselves, by a government. You know, yeah.
Right.
You know, a public monopoly. You know, that's what government is, and there's real benefits to that. I mean, it's one thing to have private corporations making computers and cars. It's another thing to have them running utilities and building nuclear reactors and you know, running running schools. I mean, there are reasons why we have a government. You know, that it can potentially be a democratic thing that can be used for the common good. But you know, there's no point in competing with services like that.
You know, well, it's a system. It's a system that has to be in place, but along with their systemization of the American people, I believe that they're victimizing the American people in the same sense.
Oh yeah, it doesn't. We don't have universal health care with this the Affordable Health Act. You know, it doesn't take care of the main problem, which is the insurance companies. They're making billions of dollars. You know, I mean, it seems to me that, from what I understand, it is an improvement over the previous situation, but it's certainly not like European or Canadian style healthcare.
Right. Got another question from John in Canada. As you know, we do have BBS Radio is heard worldwide. We have John in Canada that's asking, who are your musical mentors, or who are your most cherished people in the music industry that gave you the willingness and the strength to go out and do this?
Well, there's a whole lot of them, but I mean, certainly if I were to mention some songwriters that are some of the most amazing songwriters on the planet that have influenced me profoundly, who a lot of people have never heard of. There's a guy named Jim Page in Seattle, who's just a phenomenal songwriter, who I discovered when I was like 19, and he completely blew my mind there in the Pike Place Market. And there's a guy named Rob Johnson, R-O-B-B Johnson, in England, and originally from London. Now he lives in the Brighton area. He's phenomenal songwriter who has had a profound impact on me, and certainly loads of others, Phil Oakes, Bob Dylan, Buffy St. Marie, Annie DeFranco, the whole, you know, to some extent, the whole punk rock scene, and the Clash, and it's hip-hop generally existing. I mean, it's, you know, there's lots of influences that, you know, bluegrass, Irish traditional music, but in terms of particular songwriters, I mean, if I were to really put out two of them there, I would say Tim Page and Rob Johnson. Check them out.
All right, I've got another question for you. Mary in Missouri, she says, David, I know David did songs criticizing Bush, but does he think Obama is just as bad? And can he sing a song for us? So, can you sing a song for us?
I got a whole bunch of songs about Obama, and I don't have my guitar with me. And even if I did through this phone, it would sound like crap. But I have written a whole bunch of songs about Obama, and you can actually find most all of my songs at soundcloud.com/DavidRovix. And there's one song. That's one of the more recent ones. It's just called Barack Obama, and there's another called If Only It Were True, which is inspired by watching the Republicans debate about Obama and all the things, you know, they're calling him, like, you know, crazy socialist peacenik and all this. You know, I thought, if only what they say about the president were true, we'd be living in paradise. But, of course, it's not true. He's not a socialist, and he's not a peacenik. So, I've written about five songs about Obama that are all
not in the least bit, not when he's related to Dick Cheney and Laura Bush, and he's a member of the family. And this is what a lot of people don't realize. Just because he's black, it does not mean that he's not a member of the elite family. So, Julia in Germany, this is your fan again. She's asking another question. She said, David, regarding the NSA spying scandal, do you think there's a chance that a new independent network of internet and mobile phone and landline providers, maybe the help of computer experts of Wikipedia, can be built that cannot be spied on by the NSA, or is it too late to clean up the whole mess?
Oh, technically, I have no idea. I would ask Julian Assange and other experts on that sort of thing about that. I'm not sure about the technical stuff, but I think in terms of politics, obviously the NSA is completely, and the U.S. intelligence agencies generally are just completely out of hand, just operating on this whole notion of American exceptionalism and doing things that they would never stand for if other countries were doing it. You know, they'd be, as they have been for years, they'd be, the U.S. authorities would be complaining about Chinese efforts to start a cyber war and all this kind of stuff, you know, which there was a lot of really alarmist journalism going on in the mainstream press for years about that. And then suddenly Snowden blows the cover on the NSA, and we're finding out that every one of the things that they were accusing China of, the U.S. has been doing globally to allies and enemies alike. And I don't know what the way is to defend ourselves from that, other than to change the political landscape in the U.S. But certainly it would seem like a good idea to be using services that don't have infrastructure inside the U.S. I mean, that's what some people have said, but I don't know.
Well,
living in the U.S., I guess it's hopeless for me.
Yes, it's hopeless for all of us. With that being said, yeah, there's been a lot of talk about that in the media. They're looking at Iran and Syria doing cyber wars against them and bringing down our internet. I think that's probably what they're planning on for another false flag operation, so they can say, well, we're going to go to war against Syria and Iran, since they know that the American people don't want them to go to war against anybody. What do you think about that?
I mean, I don't know what they're going to... Usually the modus operandi of the United States is to find an excuse to go to war so they can try to sell the war as self-defense. So, they'll either just manufacture a situation or they'll exaggerate a situation in order to make it look like the U.S. has been the victim and we need to defend ourselves. It always works better to sell a war when you can look like you're defending yourself, and when of course they have such domination of the corporate media, they're able to more successfully paint that picture. People will believe it. Amazingly enough, around the world, people can't believe it, but inside the United States, people do believe it because of the way the media and the educational system and the general sort of tribalistic, patriotic fervor that we're raised with here, it makes it possible to believe that the U.S. is actually a victim,
Yeah, well, they tend to do that. I guess they learned well from the Israelis on how to do that, because it always seems to be the Zionists that are behind doing these backdrop scenes so everybody can have sympathy for the so-called victims that are really the offenders. Anyways, with that being said, we'll be right back with David Rovix, our guest tonight on the BBS Radio Network, with the People Speak, and our sound engineer, our awesome sound engineer, Don Newsom. We'll be right back.
Secretly bombing an entire nation. They wiretapped a hotel room, then they got caught and the government was deposed because of secret documents Daniel Ellsberg exposed. One government came down, and to prevent a repetition of this fact, the next government passed the Freedom of Information Act. Each administration since then hoped it would go away, and then they finally seized the chance on a September day. They passed the Patriot Act before a single congressman had read it, but don't ask the executive how they interpret it. Because that itself is secret, never to be revealed. Just like their secret prisons and all the secret torture sessions they concealed. Then they formed the prison program so they wouldn't even have to ask compliant corporations to assist them in the task of collecting information. Every email you ever wrote, every book you ever read, every call you ever made, everything you ever said. I looked into a prism. What did I see? A police station. Enforcing secret laws, forming secret juries to serve a secret cause. I looked into a prism. What did I see? A police state looking back at me. One brave man came forward and then he fled town. And now the secret government men mean to hunt him down. Feinstein says he is a traitor. Says so too, but I'd say if we have a future, it's because of the whistle that he blew. I looked into a prism. What did I see? A police state looking back at me. I looked into a prism. What did I see?
The library's got answers, and books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
Hi, this is Llewellyn from Paradise Music, your source for the best in relaxation music. Be sure to hear more of our music at our website, www.paradisemusic.us.com. If you want the best in relaxation music, visit us at www.paradisemusic.us.com and enjoy hundreds of audio clips from all our talented artists.
In America, most of us have the basics we need to survive, but there are millions of children all over the world who don't. Children who must work instead of going to school. Children who were forced to fight as child soldiers. Children who can't have an ordinary childhood because they lack health care, clean water, or good nutrition. For these children, there is UNICEF. UNICEF works in 157 countries and territories, providing children with what they need to survive and grow. To learn more, visit unicefusa.org or call 1-800-4-UNICEF.
Hello, this is Wesley Snipes. And when I'm divinely inspired and spiritually motivated, I listen to VBS
Radio.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please give to the World Food Program.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you.
Welcome back to The People Speak on the BBS Radio Network. This is Rock Cash with Dave Rovix. Dave, welcome back. Thank you for being here again.
Oh, my pleasure.
Let's go back to where we left off just before. I had another question from a woman in Washington by the name of Erica. She wants to know if you've been to Japan and if you've done a song about Fukushima.
Yes, I've been to Japan a number of times, and I did write a song about the earthquake and tsunami called Minami Sanriku. Sanriku, this is the name of the song, and also the name of a town. I have written a song on the subject.
Great.
And a bunch of other songs about Japan, Japanese history, which is a fascinating thing.
Oh, yeah, they've got a lot of depth and a lot of culture.
Indeed.
Tom and Marilyn. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I just said indeed. There may be a delay or something.
Tom in Maryland wants to know where you'll be singing live next, and he wants to know if you've ever played mainstream radio or television.
I will next be playing live a show in Portland, Oregon, where I live, on Saturday night, and then I'll be next month doing a bunch of shows around Texas, Florida, and Oklahoma, and December in British Columbia, and January in Ireland, and then in April, May, I'll be touring around Britain and Europe, and continental Europe. So that's kind of the next several months out. But the plan is, which of course might change depending on gigs that come up. As far as mainstream radio, well, the closest probably I ever came to mainstream was getting played regularly on a national show on BBC Radio when Andy Kershaw had a show on Radio 3. And he used to play me quite regularly. And that had a huge impact on my life in terms of gigs in Great Britain and in terms of being known by more people there. But that's pretty much been it as far as any. And then once he lost his job, I have never been played on BBC since. That was the closest brush with fame, I think. I mean, I've been on national radio shows in a bunch of different countries on public radio, never on any commercial stations. But in terms of being played at all regularly by a sort of mainstream radio, that Andy Kershaw's weekly show is the closest I ever came with that.
So you've been on the independent stations, but none of the corporates will take you on and let you go on there and expose them.
Well, yeah, what? Of course, you know. And then independent stations, I mean, not just not just little community stations, but internet, podcasts and stuff, but also, you know, public radio in different countries. But that's the which of course in the United States is a very corporate phenomenon by and large. But in terms of the actual commercial media, forget it.
Yeah, well, of course, they don't want you exposing them. And that's the way it is with anybody that's open to suggesting that they might be doing something wrong and waking up the sheep. But you're doing a great job. You're getting out there to a lot of people, and that's awesome. What was the name of the song that you wrote for the Palestinians?
I've written about 19 songs about the Palestinian struggle. And if you go to soundcloud.com/David Rovix, it's divided there in sets. And there's one set called Palestine. And there's, I think, in there, and there may be 15, but I've written several others that aren't there.
What would you think the fair and just thing for the Palestinian issue would be, the Palestinian-Israeli issue?
Well, of course, I mean, fair and just and you know, what might potentially ever happen are two different things. But I think there's not going to be any solution to the problem until the United States is not supporting Israel with everything it does. And until, I mean, I think what, like, you know, so many conflicts in the Middle East now and historically are to a large extent proxy wars between great powers. And, you know, while it's often difficult to tell who's wagging the tail, who's the dog and who's the tail when it comes to the U.S.-Israel relationship, regardless of who's wagging whose tail, the fact is that there's a major, major military and economic power that is supporting the Israel. So until that changes, I don't see that there is any potential solution for the situation there. But the just solution would be for Palestinian refugees to have the right of return, for there to be one state with some form of democracy, democratic rule, which naturally would have a Palestinian majority.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
I mean, that would be reality. If the refugees had the right to return, and you combine them with the population in the refugee camps and surrounding countries, and the Palestinian population in the West Bank and Gaza, and within Israel, then you know, that I would think should be the country like it was before, you know. And I don't think any major Palestinian group actually has proposed driving the Jews into the sea. This is propaganda that is, you know, fed into the mouths. You know, people are made to look like they're saying this when actually what they're saying is something very different, which is talking about what the South Africans would call a multiracial democracy. You know, people from South Africa have been to Palestine lots of times and have said this is like apartheid, you know, except people like Desmond Tutu have said it's worse. And the solution would be something similar, not that they've reached a real solution in South Africa because the whites still own most of the land, but a solution in terms of one state, multiracial democracy, you know, where, you know, one person, one vote, whether that, you know, Jewish, Muslim, or Christian. You know.
Well, but, I believe that's really what the Israelis are fearing the most, that it becomes they want that as a one state solution, but I don't think that they would be able to maintain with the populace being Palestinian. Because that could all change. It could be Israel, and then all of a sudden it'll be Palestine due to an overwhelming vote of the majority of Palestinians. So,
well, that's right. I mean, the demographics are against the Israelis, so the Israelis don't want to have one state solution. And I mean, they want to have a no state solution. Really, they want to, you know, keep on delaying and building more settlements until eventually there's no, you know, they seem to be just continually trying to drive Palestinians off of their land. It's a continuous process. It's sort of a, you know, you could say it's like a low level war kind of thing. It's not like you know, they're going on a, you know, it's not like they're just mowing down all the cities in one big go at, you know, with tanks and stuff. It's more like make life as difficult or impossible as possible for the Palestinians so that they'll slowly trickle out and leave, you know. That's I think the policy, and the longer they can delay any kind of international action by having the, you know, carte blanche from the United States, you know, then they can just keep on pretending that they are negotiating when and caring about any kind of settlement, when really all they're doing is building settlements and you know, just spitting in the face of any kind of real peace process with every settlement they build.
Well, it's all about being underhanded in everything they do. They like to be sneaky and very, very cruel in their actions. Just like the 67 war, where they said the Arabs attacked them when it was the other way around. They attacked Egypt. They attacked the Jordanian soldiers that were in the West Bank. I know I was there in 1967, and there was never any talk of the Arabs attacking the Jews. But there was Jews coming in and attacking us. Matter of fact, I remember Israeli soldiers firing machine guns at the feet of children that were in the street, blocking the little street that we lived on. And they fired at our feet. So they don't care who they mow down, who they kill, who they hurt, as long as they get their way. I find this hard and discerning that people that suffered a Holocaust would go out there and be so atrociously mean to other people. What is your thought on that?
Well, I think that basically there's people that suffered from the Holocaust who decided this should never happen again to us, screw everybody else. And then there's other people who suffered from the Holocaust and decided this should never happen to anybody, period. And so I think it's, you know, partially a result of this, of the Holocaust. You got, I mean, of course, you know, all these tendencies preceded the Holocaust as well, but you have people who are very, very much like progressive and opposed to Zionism and opposed to oppression of anybody. You know, they have come out of the Holocaust and learned from that experience. And then you have other people like those who founded the State of Israel, who are whose attitude is much more like, this should never happen to us again, and we'll screw anybody else we need to in order to make sure that's the case. You know, so let's go steal somebody else's land so we can have a homeland. You know? There's different tendencies, but the Holocaust, though, I think, no question, the Holocaust fueled the Zionist movement. You know, not the Palestinians, of course, had nothing to do with it, but they pay the price of it, and the Holocaust and Zionism are intimately linked. In that Zionism was never that popular among Jews until the Holocaust. You know, it was a small movement, relatively small movement, up until the Holocaust started. And then you had loads of Jews who were not allowed to move to the United States or to England or other places, which were actively turning away refugees and sending them back to their deaths. But they were allowed to move to Palestine. So they did. And
well, the Palestinians were the only ones that opened up their arms and accepted them and gave them hospitality. And I guess this is what you get for being nice.
Well, the Palestinians were under British rule, so of they course. Didn't have much choice in the matter at the time. It was a British decision.
Right.
But certainly Jews have lived among Christians and Muslims in the Ottoman Empire as well as in Palestine. For thousands of years. And within the Ottoman Empire, which, of course, Palestine was part of for such a long time, there was a real tolerance for people from all sorts of different backgrounds. And that was the norm throughout most of the Ottoman period, unlike in Europe, where anybody who wasn't basically a Roman Catholic was being slaughtered all the time in continental Europe. And, you know, yeah, the Inquisitions and the Crusades and fascism and all these other terrible periods for anybody who was different in any way, be they Muslim, Jew, or whoever. You know, whereas at the same time in the Ottoman Empire, you had a regime that tolerated ethnic, religious, and linguistic differences throughout the empire. Totally different kind of situation. You know, you had thousands of people every year fleeing Europe to move to the Ottoman Empire. And in some cases, in some years, of course, you had hundreds of thousands of people fleeing Europe to go to the Ottoman Empire, including hundreds of thousands of Jews who left Europe because of the persecution of the Catholic Church and moved to live, you know, in freedom and prosperity in places like Istanbul.
Well, here in the land of the sleeping sheep, it doesn't seem to click through their minds. They think that the Arabs and the Jews have been fighting for thousands of years, and they don't realize that this is just the falsification of the Israeli propaganda to make it seem like that in Jewish propaganda.
I'm not sure if I would call it Jewish propaganda, just because there's too many different tendencies within the Jewish community for anything to be Jewish
propaganda. Zionist propaganda.
But certainly it's Zionist propaganda, absolutely.
Yes, yes. Tell us some more about your website and publications that you wrote. We know you write your political views and your belief on music should remain free for the people to listen to. And
yeah, I think it's really the thing about the free music is, I mean, the music industry works and hard and spends a lot of money to try to convince everybody that giving away your music is theft and free downloads is theft, and we should all be terribly outraged by this whole thing, and we should be supporting laws that will criminalize it and put people in prison and all this kind of thing. But, you know, what people, I think, really need to understand is that, first of all, there's two different things happening here. There's the ethical question of what is original, you know, that whole question, which is a very thorny one. And then there's the practical question of who benefits from free downloads and who doesn't benefit from this new reality. And I think what you will find, certainly on while the jury may be out on the ethical issue, and maybe that is a whole complicated ball of wax philosophically and everything, what there's no question about is in terms of the practical aspects, is that 99% approximately of musicians who are any good out there who are producing recordings are or could be benefiting from free downloads. Because the whole commercial radio landscape has been a total disaster since at least 1980 in the United States, for sure, that avenue for publicity has been closed to us for a long, long time. And the internet is the best thing to happen since, you know, who knows? You know, I mean, in terms of technology, it's the best thing probably ever because it's so interactive. And you don't have to be, a rich artist with lots of publicity behind you to be heard, you know. And so it's a good thing for most musicians. And, you know, they're not going to be buying your music until they can hear it for free. And that's the role that radio has played for a long time. And this is the role that the internet is playing now for most of us, not for the elite who are already benefiting from the media landscape as it is, which is not to disparage. I'm not calling Bruce Springsteen an elitist at all. I'm just saying that, you know, there are some great people among that elite of musicians who get played on commercial radio on a regular basis. But, some of them are fantastic and a lot of them are not. But regardless of that, the system that they are playing it in, you know, regardless of whether some good people are successful within it, the system is broken. And many of them would be the first to acknowledge that fact.
Oh, absolutely. What about websites like cdbaby.com or any of those? Are you able to get on those sites, or do they try to?
Sure. I mean, another thing, the internet with, sites like CD Baby and, various, internet radio stations and stuff, they're accessible to anybody who wants to do it, who wants to sign up. And, I mean, that comes with problems, too, because, of course, there's uses for record labels and for radio stations because they help act as a filter, you know. So there's a hell of a lot of junk out there, and that's just how it is. But that's one of the downsides of the internet. But it is possible for at least a fair bit of the good stuff to kind of rise to the top among the stuff that's out there for those who are looking. I mean, there's still no real replacement for having a label and staff and people really promoting your music. I mean, but word of mouth works pretty well if you don't have all that stuff backing you up.
Well, word of mouth, and of course you've got the People Speak on the BBS radio network that will bring
exactly.
you back at any time that you want to come back. Just of course contact Mike and we'll have you back a few more times if that's okay with you. I really enjoy our chat. Unfortunately, we have to cut it short. We're rounding the hour. David Rovics, thank you very much. That's davidrovics.com. You can get all of his music. Go ahead, David. I cut you off.
Oh, no, not at all. Thank you so much, and hope to talk to you again.
No worries. Love your music. Keep up the good work. Keep up the good work. Good. Don't forget to join us next week. Our guest will be John C. Dvorak, host of No Agenda Radio Show on the People Speak Radio on the BBS Radio Network with Don Newsome. Thank you and have a good evening.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people and they stood there hungry and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.